Are millennials in Jacksonville interested in living in downtown Jacksonville? We'll talk to two of them just ahead. Good Thursday morning and happy February. Live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. And thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live on the radio at 9. Also, never miss a show. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and through our app. And just ahead, how to encourage more millennials to move to Jacksonville's urban core. A new study is looking at what will work. What do you think? Get on the line now and join the conversation at 549-2937. Then later, it's our new Arts Roundtable on the show as our Art Attack looks at how should artists be paid for their work. Speaking of artists, we'll talk to two of the stars of The Lion King as the Broadway hit comes to town this month. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, there are nearly 100,000 millennials living in Jacksonville. It's one of the youngest major cities in Florida. And according to a new survey from UNF, the majority of them have a favorable impression of downtown. Other cities around the country have helped revitalize their downtowns in part by an influx of millennials, people under 35, working and living in their city's urban cores. Can Jacksonville do the same, and how can we go about it? Well, UNF is studying that right now. With more, we welcome the university's Matt Corrigan of the UNF Political Science Department, and two students who are participating in the study, Ryan McDonough and Todd Higginbotham. Matt, Ryan, Todd, guys, thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning.
Thanks for being here, guys.
Good morning. Thank
you. Happy to be here.
And here's our question to callers. When it comes to the millennial factor here on the First Coast, getting more young people to work, live, and play in the city's urban core, how important do you think that is? What are your thoughts? What are your comments? What would it take to get you to work downtown, live downtown, spend more time downtown? Give us a call. As we talk about UNF's new study, the number to join the show, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on our Facebook page. And Ryan and Todd are two students, Matt, in your Masters of Public Administration program. We'll talk to them in a moment about what they think about the city's urban core. They are millennials, of course, so we want to know what they think. But first, tell us about this study. What's UNF looking at?
Sure. And unfortunately, I'm not a millennial, but, you know, I wish I was.
You do have a baby face, I got to say.
It's over, you know. Anyway, this comes from the urban politics and policy class in our Masters of Public Administration program. And really, when we kind of laid out the class, it was a class of 10, to really get into this idea of how you balance policy with politics, we needed to do a project. And because you can come up with all the greatest policy ideas in the world, but if you don't understand the political realities, that they're not going to go anywhere. And so we looked at millennials in downtown, and the approach they took is I think a balanced approach of kind of looking at what other cities have done. What's the demand here? And then what are the alternatives? And both Todd and Ryan can tell you about that.
All right, Todd. So what have other cities done that's been successful? What did you find?
I'll tell you what, I'm Ryan, and I'll jump in on this one. So when you're looking at what other cities are doing to attract millennials, it's going to be on jobs, housing, and mass transportation. And Charlotte's a great city to compare to Jacksonville just because it has a similar number of millennials. And in Charlotte in 1998, they had this half-cent sales tax that went towards laying the groundwork for what's the poster child for mass transit in the Southeast. And we're looking at housing. Developments are going up. Apartments are being filled. The vacancy levels are staying the same. And with jobs, I really want to kind of cut this myth that millennials are only interested in tech. It's just not the case. Jobs are jobs.
Sure. Everybody needs money.
Fair enough. So, you know, Charlotte has 7 Fortune 500 companies and jobs in traditional sectors like healthcare and insurance. And when you put all these three together, what you're really doing is laying a foundation to sustainably manage growth and to hopefully build, you know, on other things like entertainment and whatever X factors a city might have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So then Charlotte has been successful. Why hasn't Jacksonville? And what's Jacksonville not doing that it needs to be doing?
Well, Charlotte really got off on a good foot there with their light rail project. And when Charlotte had that to stimulate growth, Jacksonville really didn't. And we had some things going for us, like the Skyway, but it just wasn't on the same scale of what Charlotte was doing. And I really think that Charlotte was able to invest in their downtown a lot more through the 80s and the 90s, as a lot of other downtowns were going downhill.
So Charlotte, you guys think, in terms of just infrastructure spending in particular, which is a big heavy lift of taxpayer dollars, you think that paid off for Charlotte in the long run? Convincing their taxpayers to spend money on their downtown in the form of infrastructure.
I think that they have a vision and they're building on it. Now, there are some issues of user, folks transiting from using their cars to using mass transit. That's an ongoing issue, but at least they're laying the groundwork for it, and that's something that you really need to catch up on.
And so that's attracting, you think, more millennials to a city like Charlotte, North Carolina. Is that the only thing, though?
You need to have the groundwork there, because I think that when you have, things like entertainment, you can have a bar and nightlife and, clubs and things anywhere. You just need to have that sort of long-term planning to manage a city that's, eventually you're going to reach some tipping point, and you need to have mass transit there, you need to have jobs, and you need to have housing.
Those three legs of the stool, and it's 549-2937 as we talk about this study out of UNF, looking at how to attract more millennials to Jacksonville's urban core. Matt Corrigan, this is interesting, and once you complete this study, are you going to present it to anybody?
Yeah, well, we've already done a little bit of that. We were fortunate to have Oliver Barakat from the Downtown Investment Authority come and for the final class and look at the project, and he gave us some really good ideas. And during the semester, they were able to go talk to some stakeholders. We were fortunate enough to talk to Peter Rummel. We went to talk to Jake Gordon and people like that. And basically what they concluded is Jacksonville needs two things that other cities have always done when you do growth in downtown, and especially for millennials, is that you need people and you need money. And like it or not, you're going to have some government incentives, and those are very controversial. But in all the cities that we studied, the city government was there.
And of course, that's always the big challenge, Todd, is selling the public on something like that. Now, recently, Mayor Curry was able to sell the public on a half-cent sales tax when it came to dealing with our unfunded pension liability. That was a big issue, dragging down our finances. What do you think it would take to convince the public on a big investment on something like this?
Well, I think we really need to just show people how successful it can be. Give them Charlotte as an example, other cities like Austin and Pittsburgh. Other cities that have had a lot of economic return on their investments in their downtown areas. And I'm a really big fan of what Austin has been able to do with the University of Texas, and they've been able to pull big tech companies out of Silicon Valley all the way across the country there just because of the investments they made in their downtown with Texas.
And as city planners and CEOs know, Matt, cities that don't think this way, they lose young, talented people in droves. Young, talented guys like these decide, well, I'm not going to stay in Jacksonville. I'm going to go somewhere more interesting.
It's important. One of the findings from the survey is that when you survey millennials at a cross-section of them here in Jacksonville, 47%, go to downtown maybe 2 to 3 times a year. And so that shows that they have an interest there, but they don't go there that much, and that we need a tipping point to turn that 2 to 3 times into 10 to 15 times a year. And I think that's what, when you look at the study, that's what we're trying to find. What is that tipping point that's going to attract people downtown?
So Ryan, Todd, one of you is staying, one of you is going. What are your plans once you finish your studies at UNF?
Well, I had an opportunity up in D.C. that I just couldn't pass up. Jacksonville has always had my heart. I went here for undergrad. When I first started working, I had a job in the international humanitarian sphere. And then I came back to Jacksonville, and now it breaks my heart that I have to leave for a little bit. But I just think it'll feel right. The right opportunity will be there, and the right sort of infrastructure will be there. And personally, I'd just like not to touch my car Thursday through Sunday. So if I could do that and mix in some recreation and, you know, have a good job. You have to be a mixed bag of things.
That's really important to you, isn't it?
Well, it's important just because I'm happier when I'm outside my car. Yeah. I know my professor here likes to point out that I'm just a single N of one. So maybe my opinion isn't the exact same as everybody else's, but just it makes for easier living.
And that's a sentiment millions of people your age share. They want a walkable environment. They want to be in a walkable urban environment. They don't want to be dependent on cars.
And that really comes out when you look at some of the other cities. And driving just isn't as big of an issue for this generation as it is, I think, for our generation.
Okay, so Todd Higginbotham, you're staying in Jacksonville, correct?
Right, I am. And I really see the potential here, and I see where the city could go. And I've visited a lot of other places, and I've seen their downtowns, and I really think that Jacksonville has almost more potential than all of them. And so we just have to capitalize on that potential, and I'm excited to try and do that. And I'm going to be one of those millennials that wants to live downtown, and I also like the idea of not having to use my car everywhere, but I think we can create that environment in downtown Jacksonville, and I want to be a part of that.
All right, the lines are jammed. They always jam up when we take on this topic. This is something our audience cares a lot about as we talk about UNF's new study looking at how to get more millennials living, working, and playing in Jacksonville's urban core. What do you think it'll take? 549-2937. Casey in Mandarin. So far, no calls from downtown. Actually, I think there is one, but let's begin in Mandarin with Casey. Hey, Casey.
Hey, Melissa. I don't know if I'm considered a millennial. I was born in 92, so I'm 25, married.
Sure.
I'll tell you, all of my friends, as far as when we used to go out, I have two kids now, but when we used to go out, you know, we look for convenience, and we look for fun, funky stuff to do. So when you look at where we're going, you know, we used to go out to the beach bars or, you know, places with pool tables or cornhole, things like that. I think if there are more businesses, maybe with, you know, jazz bars, just, you know, fun entertainment type of stuff to do. And we're in Jacksonville, so the people that are here are used to driving. I mean, we drive everywhere. We don't really use mass transit like that. If you're trying to attract people from other cities, maybe look into that. But as far as utilizing what we already have in Jacksonville, we need better parking. We need convenience, and we want to be able to use our cars. And then as far as people, you know, having kids and wanting to get downtown, downtown still has this really bad reputation of being dangerous. I'm not taking my 5-year-old, my 2-month-old to all the cool, you know, candy shop places because when we go there, it seems too dangerous. I don't want my kids around that.
Okay. Well, let me take both of those. Okay, she hung up. But Casey, if you're still listening, let's take both of those concerns one by one. The two big things we hear from people that live in the suburbs are they don't think there's enough parking, and they don't think downtown is safe. Now, Casey, if you're still listening, the truth of the matter is that there are literally thousands of parking spaces all over the city's urban core. There are parking garages all over the urban core. All you have to do is park in one and walk a block or two to your destination. You just have to get out of the mindset of thinking that you can park for free right in front of the store you want to go into, which is the suburban way of living. When you come downtown, you're in an urban environment and you have to think more like an urban person. So that's one challenge I think that downtown advocates have to overcome, Matt, when they try to encourage people to come into the city. If you're someone who lives in the suburbs of Chicago, DC, Atlanta, New York, Seattle, you understand that when you go into the city, you're going into the city and you're going to have to park in a parking garage. But for whatever reason, people here in Jacksonville haven't gotten that memo yet. And they don't understand that there's plenty of parking, but you have to park in a garage or you have to find a parking spot and you might have to circle for a minute, but there's plenty of spots.
Yeah. Two of the recommendations and Todd worked on this part of the project were that we need a downtown parking app that really works well. In other words, when you're there, it tells you where's the nearest parking availability. It may not be at the same time. That's pretty advanced, but at least where's parking in relation to where you are downtown, and that should be an app that I think could be developed. The second point on the crime is that Ryan and others had the idea that if we're going to give incentives to people to come down, town and developers, et cetera, they need to contribute to that security. They need to say, hey, what if you give us incentives to come downtown, we're going to have a security guard. We're going to make sure that's a secure environment. Because if you look at the crime stats, the downtown area is really not that bad. It's just
there's a perception,
there's a strong perception
that it's not safe.
Right.
The data does not bear that out at all.
Right.
It's not more dangerous than other parts of town. But people like Casey have the perception that it is, even though statistically, when you look at the hard numbers, it's not.
Yeah, but she's right. Those are two huge issues that I think are barriers, and you guys may want to weigh in on that.
When it comes to parking, it's there.
There are plenty of spots. Yeah.
Right.
If you drive around and you see a big blue P, white P in a blue square, that's a parking garage. Just go in it. Yeah.
I just think it's it's a cultural shift.
Yeah.
Because
suburbanites
are accustomed to a certain way of doing things, and it's really hard to get them to change.
If you're used to a big open free parking lot, it's a change in mindset.
Right.
That's all it is. Yeah, sure.
And so long as you have the amenities there that are strong enough to, provide that pull, I think it's a small bump to get over.
Let's go to Deborah in Riverside. Hey, Deborah, thanks for holding. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey there. I really like some of the things I've heard, and there's been a variety of different opinions. And I just tend to agree that we need more businesses downtown and incentives for businesses to come downtown, and possibly one or two anchor type stores. I loathe to say IKEA downtown. I go downtown to IKEA. I will not go out to the town center. It's just too far and I don't want to drive, and I'm not a millennial, but I lived in, Portland, Oregon. I've been in Pittsburgh and some other cities that are just have a thriving downtown scene, and there are all sorts of different shops and places to eat and places to go out and drink and coffee. And I just think people need to realize that we have a beautiful downtown, one of the best I've seen, and I've been around, I've seen some different cities, and our waterfront city is lovely. We just need to really, put a little bit of effort into creating a scene down there that'll be attractive to not just millennials, but everyone.
But everyone, yeah. Thank you, Deborah. She's right in that, Todd. The fundamentals, the bones are there. The buildings, the grid, it's all there. You need more bodies. You need more foot traffic. You need more businesses. You need more nightlife. But she's right about the fact that the fundamentals are in place in terms of the nut of the city's urban core.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you kind of get into this circular logic there. Which do you do first? Do you get the people down there to support the businesses, or do you get the businesses down there to bring the people? And it's a really kind of a hard question, and some people can argue it could be done different ways, but it really has to be the businesses first, I feel. And government is always going to be a part of that. And a great example of that is the Lower Street Trio project, where the city had to kick in incentives to meet that funding gap for the developer. And right now that's just is where our downtown is at. It can definitely change, and it's going in the right direction, but right now government's gonna have to be part of that process to bring more businesses down here, and then that will bring the people.
We are getting so many comments on Twitter and Facebook this morning. Here are just a few of the comments on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Leslie writes, we need affordable, eco-friendly housing with amenities like a post office, DMV, farmers markets, grocery stores, and entertainment. Cecil, some clubs would be nice. We used to have them, like the Milk Bar, for example. There's nothing to do now but drink or eat downtown. If I had a nickel for everybody that reminded me about the Milk Bar when we talk about this issue. And here's one from Laura. For years, the city has been trying to get people downtown, yet they allow unrestrained growth on the south side. On Twitter, Brian writes, there's an unspoken truce between the homeless and random pedestrians downtown. Hassling you means cops hassle them. And no one wants that. And here's another tweet. I'm blue in the face from saying we need better mass transit, better bicycle infrastructure, and better pedestrian infrastructure. It is just incredible. There's always just no shortage of opinions when we talk about this issue on the show. And let's take a few more calls. Somebody a minute ago called in and said she does not ever want to go out to the town center. Lucy is out at the town center. She's been holding. Hi, Lucy. You're on the air. Hey, Lucy, go ahead.
I just wanted to say that it's a beautiful downtown, and I go there at least weekly, and the Symphony and the Florida Theater, but nobody's going to move there until there are grocery stores. Nobody. I go to the grocery store twice a week, a minimum of twice a week, and I do the farmer's market, but they're only open on weekends, and you run out of fresh produce all the time, and just nobody's going to go there until there's grocery stores. I would like to see the government, the old courthouse, the bottom floor taken over by a Publix and apartments above them. I think you would have a great business, and I think people would support it and walk there. And
okay, so you don't think the Harvey's in downtown and the Fresh Market on the edge of downtown? You don't think that's enough?
Is that walkable? If you live over by the landing, would you pick up your groceries at the Fresh Market and walk to over by the landing? If you have ever walked with your groceries, they're very heavy.
Yeah,
and you would. Every 5,000 people can sustain a grocery store easily.
Okay, so thanks, Lucy. Thank you for that. Is that in the study?
It's not in the study, but I 100% agree that one in the pedestrian friendliness of everything. And I've lived in a lot of cities where, you know, I've carried my groceries on my back. It kept me a bit healthier, I guess. But the point is that I always had a safe from point A to point B. I never worried about having to cross six lanes of traffic. I never had to worry about drivers that didn't know how to handle pedestrian lights who made rights regardless of if I had the right of way or not, which is a huge it bothers me. But the thing is, you need to have this cultural understanding from traffic, transit, and pedestrians that they need to work together, and it needs to be prioritized that pedestrians are safe. And
we're not there yet. Not even close.
Absolutely not. And only people aren't going to start carrying their groceries until they feel safe on the roads.
Yeah. Chad is in Mandarin. Hi, Chad. What do you think?
Oh, wow. I'm so excited. I finally got through. I call all the time, Melissa, and I'm excited to be on air.
Oh, good.
So I just wanted to say that my wife and I, Carliana, we were shopping for houses downtown for the latter part of last year for like 3 months. And I'm from the Northeast, so I'm used to walking from place to place, and I want it just to be in the environment. I believe in the city this time is going to get it right downtown at one point in time. But I just think that a lot of the expectation, a lot of the anticipation from the investor standpoint, the folks that are buying up a lot of historical Springfield and spots like that, like, it's already priced in to many of the properties. And don't get me wrong, like, you can get much more for your money downtown, but when you factor in, especially with like the older parts, including Springfield, when you factor in insurance costs, the higher utilities, and then still you're waiting on those amenities to show up. And, you know, we've got two kids, the school districts, it would be a challenge. So all of those forces kind of put pressure on us, and it just didn't feel like the right thing to do. It felt like we were forcing it at this point in time. So I know it's kind of a leap of faith, but for us, you know, I just didn't really want to put my family in that situation with the cost and the lack of being where downtown will probably be 3 to 5 years from now. So,
well, thanks for sharing that, Chad. Everyone has to make the decision that's best for them and their family. Thanks for sharing that, and thanks for calling. Keep calling, okay?
Yep, no problem. Thank you so much, Melissa.
Bye-bye. Yeah. I mean, everybody chooses the neighborhood that's right for them. And let's go now to Katie. She's downtown. Hey, Katie, you're on the air.
Hi, Melissa. This is my first time calling.
Great.
I have lived downtown a couple of times. And what I've noticed, you know, listening to people call in and stuff from other areas of town, is they're like, you don't have the grocery store, which, like you said, there's a Harvey's. Is it a Publix that you want? No, it's not. It almost seems, I know you had a caller, I believe it was last week, who called about wanting a Publix, and then kids in Riverside will move downtown if there's a Publix, which to me kind of sounds like you're trying to gentrify the area, which I have lived there for so long, and I've never had any issues with safety. I've worked downtown. I walk to and from work. I've never had any issues. And I think that people who only come so often, like you said, maybe a handful of times a year, they're only seeing what they see when they go on those times. And so I think that in order for downtown to become what people want it to be, you have to be willing to invest in it. And that means moving there when it's not necessarily ideal. And then you're working, you know, almost grassroots to try to get it to be what you want it to be. But it's not going to be a situation where you say, I want all of these things. Boom, it happens. Everybody can move downtown.
Sure, sure. Katie, thanks for sharing that. You know, that reminds me of a friend of mine, guys. She grew up in Jacksonville, moved away some time ago, worked on Wall Street all through the go-go 80s and 90s. In the early 80s, she scraped together, I think it was something like $30,000. She's an African-American woman, by the way. So she had a very hard time in the early 80s getting a loan from a major bank. But she did it as a single woman, and she scraped together enough money to buy two brownstones in Brooklyn. Okay. This was like early 80s, 81, 82. Now, the neighborhood she bought these brownstones in Brooklyn was pretty sketchy back then. And everybody she knew on Wall Street, her family here in Florida, they thought she was insane to buy these properties. But she bought them and she held them. And that was what, 35 years ago? Guess what those properties are worth now? Take a wild guess.
I'm going to say 10. I mean, it's hipster haven. Yeah, so
what's that?
It's hipster haven.
Yeah, guess what her real estate investment. And by the way, she rents them out. She's got 6 or 8 apartments and she lives in one of them. So she lives off her rental income.
Tens of millions.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. So that's only to say that, as Katie pointed out, it can take decades for a neighborhood or a city or an area of town to really develop and really flower in terms of real estate values and social capital. But once it hits that tipping point, it hits.
Yeah. And one of the things we learned is that Brooklyn area is necessary for downtown development in the urban core. And Jacksonville, Brooklyn, yeah. And that's for those listeners who don't know.
By the way, I meant Brooklyn, New York.
Oh,
yes.
You meant Jacksonville. Oh, okay, all right. I'm sorry.
The woman I just was telling you about, she bought brownstones in Brooklyn, New York.
Okay, right. All right. Well, if you're talking about the area of, you know, the Times Union, and I'm talking about Jacksonville, Brooklyn, with now has the Fresh Market, it was important that place, that area did well, because now investors can see that there is a demand. And basically, if you look at Brooklyn, a lot of the things that we're talking about are occurring there. Now we just need to move it into the downtown area.
Well, I think that we need to just, one, acknowledge what exists and then connect them all in a pedestrian-friendly, transit-friendly way. Just rather than trying to create something new, really taking advantage of what we already have, which is a beautiful city, you know, low unemployment, 300 days of sunshine a year. Who wouldn't want to live here? But we just need to better connect what it is that, you know, we already have.
Well, keep us posted and let us know, hopefully, about the next phase of this. But it's a study from UNF looking at how to better maximize downtown's potential with millennials. Two millennials who participated in UNF's Masters of Public Administration program, Ryan McDonough and Todd Higginbotham, joined us along with UNF's Matt Corrigan. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Much more still ahead later. Two of the stars of The Lion King joined the show. But up next, our new arts roundtable, The Art Attack. Back in a moment.
It's a series of stories about people who are separated by events in history, who are looking for the person who helped them survive. When you get to witness these reunions and talk to these people, there's a real tenderness.
Mary Frances?
Rick,
look at you.
Would Don't we all wish that someone would come to us and say, you did something deeply meaningful, and it changed the course of my life.
Good to see
Tuesday night at 8 on WJCT Public Television.
Wouldn't it be nice to know what's in the local daily newspaper, even if you have blindness or diminishing eyesight? WJCT's radio reading service can help. You'll hear what's in the Florida Times-Union every day, articles, op-eds, obituaries, even the comics. Sign up at wjct.org/radio reading. Our thanks to Florida Eye Specialists, Delta Gamma of UNF, and the Radio Reading Service volunteer readers for giving voice to the printed word.
On the next Jazz Night in America, what does it mean to retire from jazz?
I would have liked it if I had examples and role models in the jazz world. The hard part was not deciding, but deciding when.
Gary Burton opens up, and we've got music from his final concert in the States. I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First Credit Union are proud to present the 5th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, February 10th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel. Tickets are $30. Tickets purchased for the 2016 and 2017 events will be honored. Share ideas with colleagues, learn new ways to engage students, and empower yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets today at wjct.org/teach.
But it's Irish. Welcome back. Well, here's a question. What would be a fair salary for performing artists in Jacksonville? Of course, most theater professionals in this city and most cities don't receive any pay for all the work they do, building sets, attending rehearsals, making the costumes, acting on stage. A new fund is going to change that model. We're going to discuss it right now on our exciting new Arts Roundtable on the show. We call it the Art Attack. Hear what their thoughts. We welcome Lee Hamby of the Five and Dime Theater. Good morning.
Good morning.
Shawana Brooks with the Jacksonville Public Library.
Good morning.
Jamario Stills from Phase 8 Theater Company.
Good morning.
Alicia Summers, VP at Regions Bank.
Good morning.
And Katie McCaughan. Did I get that right?
McCaughan.
McCaughan of Jacksonville Dance Theater.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What a roundtable. I feel like, I don't even know. Like, I'm presiding over, what am I presiding over here? This is just so incredible. Dorothy Parker or something.
Oh.
Okay, so let's begin with you, Alicia Summers, because this is about money. And you work at a bank. Now, this is called Stage Fund, a new effort in town to pay theater professionals for their work. That's exciting.
It's very exciting. You know, Melissa, when you go to buy a painting, that artist is compensated. When you go to different artists are paid, different things. And what we found is local actors were not being paid for their work, and the local artisans that put on those shows not being paid. And so I can tell you this is a passion project for Diane Brene Garcia, Lisa Goodrich, and Lee. And just the conversation and what we've had is that we need our theater community to be compensated for the joy and the rewards that they give us in seeing their performances.
Absolutely. And Lee Hamby, you're with Five and Dime Theater. Jamario Stills, you run Phase 8 Theater Company.
Yeah.
Most people do this as a labor of love. So This is exciting to see that people are going to be paid.
Absolutely. And it's time. And I'm happy to be part of this new movement. I would be remiss if I didn't give some acknowledgement to my wonderful partner, Heather Moore, who after our first year of going, she felt like, you know, this was a necessary move. Oftentimes, as we all know, when we're looking at the operating budget, the performers are not always mentioned on that. And so with the Theater Artist Reward Program at Phase 8 Theater Company, we're going to incentivize the work of their performers.
You know, we founded our theater company, the Five and Dime, with that mission to pay our theater artists. And it's been difficult, as everybody knows, the budgets and those restraints. So it is amazing that these people like Diane and Lisa and Alicia have been working so tirelessly to figure out a way to make that happen. And also not just to make it happen, but after this grant is given, to be able to sustain that as well for us.
Shawana, this is exciting too, because there is actually data to show that arts and culture in this community delivers an economic return. This is something that attracts business and drives economic vitality to the region. And, you know, the arts and culture benefit to Jacksonville. You can quantify that with hard numbers. People might not realize that, but you can.
Yeah, and I think a lot of organizations help to tell that story. Different people where you can get those statistics and really use that to help to hopefully develop dollars and resources to those organizations. Well, that's great, but if that doesn't happen, things like what's going on here, like with stage, is going to be very important, because you're going to be able to have people bring in those resources and give them right back to that community. And we all know grants can be very challenging. You can't just hope and pray that that's going to be your only funding resource.
Right.
So this is exciting.
Now, Jacksonville Dance Theater, Katie, is your organization. And by the way, a quick mention, you're having a concert here at WJCT Saturday, February 3rd, called Dance Love Life.
Yes. So JDT is a professional dance company located here in Jacksonville Dance Theater, and it is led by me and some of my cohorts. And yes, we have a show, Dance Love Life, a concert for our community here at WJCT this Saturday. It's going to be a great show. There's some dance works that are humorous in nature and some that are just really physical and some that are more challenging. But I think it's a varied show, and we hope everybody will come out and support dance here in Jacksonville. And yes, our dancers do get paid. We've made that a part of our mission since the very beginning. We pay our dancers an hourly wage for their rehearsal and their training, and then we pay them base rate for all of their performances. And that rate can vary depend on the budget of the performance.
Excellent. But, yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, our dancers are our highest line item in our operating budget, and we're proud of that.
And you know, Alicia, so there's the dance theater, there's the symphony. Mm-hmm. The Alhambra Theater has actors' equity, and now with stage fund, actors are being paid. But by and large, it's a struggle for artists to get paid for their work. And it's the phrase starving artists is a cliche for a reason, you know. Yes.
Absolutely. And I think that's where the community, through supporting the stage fund, but also supporting our local theaters and our local performers, go to shows, go support, go buy some art, go purchases, ticket prices. All those things help create a sustainable environment. You know, we were talking, but you know, what's the return on investment?
Right. And
what's the return for the business community and our community in supporting arts? And Katie has a great answer for that, but I do too. For me, it's joy. That return of investment when you've invested in art is joy.
Mm-hmm.
And Katie's answer was different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, how do you define the return on investment, Lee?
I think mine is joy too, but I consider for most theater people, whether you work backstage or you're an actor and you don't get paid, you do it for, you know, accolades. It's almost like golf to us. It's our golf, or I call it, it's my drug. I have to do it. I mean, it brings such joy, and it has, you know, I can't imagine my life without it, really. I look back and I think, how would I be? What would I do? Would I be in trouble? Would I be in prison? Without the arts. I mean, I come from a pretty questionable side of town, and it's just brought me so much joy since I was a kid.
Shawana.
Oh, I think that return on your investment is just the passion that you get and what it invokes in your humanitarianism. Like seeing someone go out there and put out their all in a performance, in a way, or an innovative idea, something that was just created in their mind that didn't even exist. And you get to be a part of that, from the conception to the end. The designation of that within your soul, to me, just, I don't know, it lives somewhere and it makes me want to go out and make more things happen for those people to be able to do that on an everyday basis. Because that creation and that process is just as important as the doctor or the lawyer or the mayor, you know, for that factor. There's always things that happen on an everyday basis with people and work, and we want people to see how artists need to live and work and play. It's passionate.
Jamario.
Right, and I echo all the sentiments that have been spoken. And in addition to the emotion that we get out of the art forms that we participate in, it's not too hard to see, not too far from our own region, to see how these models are sustainable in other cities. theaters, symphonies, art programs, it's pretty simple for me to understand and to see that if you invest in what we're doing, if you are a business leader, the residual and cascading effect of that could last for a very long time. And so if we're looking at all these great metropolises in like Chicago and New York, clearly this model of economic impact in the arts is pretty evident. So it doesn't take too much to analyze for me.
And, you know, it's interesting to look, too, at the fact that in the art world, the stars of the art world, I think this is why I'm excited that we're having this roundtable on the show every month, because art is subjective and people are compelled to create art and they'll do it for free because they're just so compelled to create it. But the most talented artists and the most in-demand artists command millions of dollars for their work. But because art is in the eye of the beholder and because it's so subjective, it can be a challenge for artists to get paid for their work. So it can be an uphill battle sometimes for the artist. So I think this fund, this stage fund, is a real coup, isn't it, Alicia? A victory, a small victory in this arts community.
It's a small victory that we hope to grow and continue to grow. And, you know, from a business perspective, when I see the economic impact that arts brings to the community, when a Florida theater, you know, has a showing, guess what happens downtown? The restaurants get busier. People come in from out of town from Georgia. Beds get filled. Bed tax happens. Guess what? Those visitors, that comes back into our tax rolls. And from a business perspective, arts drives, you know, economics and return on that. But then also the humanitarian aspect of, hey, we've now, you know, hiring people. Let's talk, you know, when you talk about with hiring people that work in our workforce, when they've worked in a theater company or been a dancer, you know they can multitask, they know how to work with others, they know teamwork, they know collaboration, yeah. They may even know how to use a hammer and a nail when a desk breaks, as well as, you know, being able to answer the phone, because mm-hmm. arts drives that multidiscipline respect, collaboration, and teamwork to get something in front of an audience that is received well.
I think also something we're missing in addition to that, Alicia, is the professional quality of the work that of the artists who are on stage. You know, we're talking about, you know, when we look at, you know, when people look from the outside of our fields, they often look at our work and the artists we collaborate with as amateurs. These are professional top tier performers. You know, there is no mistake that our city just so happens to be a platform and a springboard for some of the most amazing artists in the nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let's just recognize what we're sitting on here. This is a gold mine. And so we should invest.
Oh, I definitely think so too, Jamario. To even that point, like when you think of all those artists who have springboarded here from Jacksonville, like I can't name all the plethora of them, but it's always sad to me that they had to leave Jacksonville in order to make that happen. There has to be something like we're doing that has to be that sustainable force to say that you can also go other places and share that, but you can come back here and also perform and live and work here. Jacksonville is an amazing city and we've got to do that.
That was a conversation we were having right before the show. So, Katie, please talk about that. She had some great things to
quickly,
say.
Quickly, please.
Yes. I mean, I'll speak specifically about dance. There's some great great schools here and great dance departments. And then what happens when those students graduate is they leave Jacksonville because they cannot get paid for their work here. So they go to where they can get paid as artists. So not only
Let's
should we import
yes.
artists,
Let's
but we should begin to export them, grow artists here and pay them for their work.
Let's it's the Art Attack. Here. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
You. We'll be right back.
If you don't like the Democrats or the Republicans, you do have other options.
Our North Star is individual liberty, not a particular document written by a particular set of people in a particular place and time.
The last election was the best ever for the Libertarian Party. We'll meet its chairman, Nick Sarwark, next time on 1A. Weekdays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk about special counsel Robert Mueller with Garrett Graff
author of a book about Mueller and his 12-year tenure as FBI director. Graf will discuss how Mueller handled a showdown with President Bush, what his conduct as FBI director can tell us about his handling of the current investigation, and what we might expect him to do if he's fired. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Two deaths that gave new life to a movement led by Martin Luther King.
The day we got the news that those two men's head got crushed in the back of the truck, we was told to keep on working.
50 years after the Memphis sanitation worker strike, we talked to one of the original strikers. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, this is Keith Marks. Join me every Thursday evening at 11 p.m. for Avant Radio, a show of curious music for curious minds. Each show is themed, curated, and contextualized to explore new music. Come get curious on Thursdays at 11 on 89.9 FM.
WJCT offers a 24-hour classical music service dedicated to live classical music programming 24 hours a day. To find out more, visit us at wjct.org/hd.
Welcome back, finally, this hour from Adam Ant to the Monster Jam. Lots of things going on this February all around the town. Here is she is at the first Thursday of every month to take us across the First Coast. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth, thespectator.com's Carrie Spuckman. Yay! Is here today. And the Spectator is bearing gifts. She brought chocolate with
yes,
us.
Yes, to give away.
To give away on the air. And you brought your very own intern to
I
the
do.
Show.
I do, Richie Evans. Say
hey,
hi.
Hey, Richie.
Hey, everybody.
Yes,
you have your own intern now?
Yeah, thespectator.com empire.
You're legit.
I'm legit.
Too legit to quit.
Yeah, you got it, sister.
Richie, do you have any idea what you're in for?
I have a little idea.
I don't think you do.
He kind of does.
All I'm saying is just prepare to roll with, you know, anything. Just roll with it. That's all I'm saying.
I'll try my best.
Okay.
He's
so Spectator,
yes,
tell me,
man,
what's happening this February.
Well, Friday, Adam Ant, who
Goody Two Shoes himself.
He had his concert, as you may recall, was during the hurricane and got canceled. So he will be back playing all of his hits. He will be antless, though. Just him. No Adam and the Ants. Just Adam.
Just
Ant.
Adam Ant. Okay.
Florida
coming
Theater,
to town
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Jacksonville Symphony. They have a bunch of really cool things going on this month. Requiem for an Angel. They had me at Courtney Lewis conducts.
Yeah,
I didn't really need to read more.
They should just say Courtney Lewis.
Courtney will be there. And it is featuring violinist Anthony Morwood.
All right. Now, Mary Wilson of the Supremes is back in town at the Ritz Theater. You know, we had the chance to meet her, oh gosh, a couple of months ago. She was in town. She's amazing.
She seems tiny.
She looked incredible.
But tiny.
Yep, very petite.
Yeah.
Now, I want to skip ahead on your
skip
list.
Ahead, sister. I know, sister, I got a lot of stuff.
Because the Broadway smash, The Lion King, if we could play a little of that music, it was here about 10 years ago.
Fun fact, more than 90 million people have seen it.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible.
I am not one of them.
It was here 10 years ago, but it's
yes,
back.
I've
okay.
heard it.
It's
pretty amazing.
Through February 11th, you can get your tickets now. Now, two of the stars of The Lion King stopped by WJCT yesterday, and I spoke to Gerald Ramsey. He plays Mufasa in the show.
Is that the dad?
That's the James, the guy that...
The mean dad?
No, that's the nice dad. Take a listen.
If you've seen the animated feature, it's very familiar, but they've also taken some characters and expanded their roles and added some songs. So they've taken some underscoring from the film, which was created by a South African musician, Lebo M, and they've put lyrics to it. And a lot of the lyrics are in Zulu or in various other African languages. So for instance, like Nala sings a song called Shadowland, and they expand on her role as a young woman leaving the Pride Lands to search for an answer to the dilemma they're facing.
Okay, so that's The Lion King through February 11th at the Florida Theater. remember James Earl Jones did the voice of Mufasa in the movie?
I never saw the movie.
What? What's wrong with you?
Where do we begin?
Richie, tell me you saw the movie.
I saw it.
Yeah.
He's lying.
Once.
Yeah. Okay. So go see The Lion King. Now, we were in a minute ago on the show, we were talking about the art attack and how artists need to get paid for their work.
Word.
Banksy, the foremost graffiti artist in the world who actually is worth millions and does get paid for his work.
How does he cash his checks, though?
I know, because nobody knows
who
he is.
Jinx.
He's being exhibited here, you said.
Yes, on February 14th.
On Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Nice.
And it also was in conjunction with the Makerspace Gallery, of course, which is spearheaded by the brilliant Shawana Brooks, who was just here. They are going to feature a coordinating exhibit called Writing on the Walls, Visual Literacy Through Street Art.
So go see Banksy.
So who cares,
at the library.
Go see Banksy.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Yes.
Now, two more news and notes from thespectator.com. You really run the gamut because...
I do. What I do.
On February 16th, it's Paula Poundstone at the Florida Theater.
Yes.
Then it's Dancing with the Stars at the Times Union Center on the 17th.
Correct.
Then on the 18th...
I mean, come on.
It's Barry Manilow.
Come on.
Barry Manilow is coming to town.
Yes.
And then, not to be outdone, on February 24th, it's the Monster Jam.
Monster Jam.
And you know what? Out of all of those, you know which one's going to sell the most tickets.
Always. Yeah. You know what? If you never see any ads, you don't have to because it's always full.
Oh, yeah.
Bring your earplugs. Yeah. For sure.
Okay. Now, you brought some chocolate.
I did. This is from, pardon my mispronunciation, Blue Chocolate.
Bleu Chocolat.
Yes. It is operated by Erica Klein. She is the chocolatier and owner. She was on...
Tell us quick. We're almost out of time.
She was on Top Chef Just Desserts.
And we want to give away this basket.
We're giving away this basket that it is all I can do not to rip it open with delicious food in it. So
email us now.
Email, sure, however you want to do it.
First Coast Connect. At WJCT.org, the unimpeachable Kevin Mershart will pick one winner at random. An incredible gift basket of chocolate.
Oh, my gosh.
Courtesy
There's
of the Spectator.
Shoe.
You
it's
must come to
shoe.
The lobby of WJCT
to pick it
to
up.
Pick it up.
You might have to fight off Willie Mae, though.
That's right. And Richie, the intern. Richie, it's good to meet you.
Good to meet you guys.
As I said, roll with the changes. Aria Speedwagon. That's your error.
Oh, I know. I'll belt it out, Ron. He has no idea who that is.
Of course
that's
not.
That's our only issue. He doesn't get my 80s references.
Of course he doesn't. All right, that's our show. 1A's up next. I'm Melissa Ross. This has been First Coast Connect. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.